Welcome to The Crisis Vote, a half hour of interviews on a global election crisis. Free Speech Radio news reporter Dar Jamail has been reporting from Iraq throughout various stages of war and U.S. occupation. He joins us this time in the final hours before Iraqis living abroad start to vote, in many cases for candidates they do not yet know about. In his regular dispatches home, Dar Jamail reports that many Iraqis are leaving the cities. You can read his dispatches at darjamailiraq.com. That's darjamailiraq.com. You will find other news reports by Dar Jamail in Interpress News, New Standard News, Alternet.org, Common Dreams, and The Nation Online, as well as other fine publications. I asked him to describe what he's seeing in Baghdad during the countdown to the election, January 30th.
Well, I have spent about half the day going on the street, interviewing people, getting the feel for what people are thinking, how are they feeling, what are they doing to prepare for this coming weekend, which is sure to be very interesting, probably very violent. And then I spent the rest of the day getting supplies of my own, just in case water is completely cut, just in case restaurants are all closed, as apparently they may well be, as so many are already closing in advance. And so I went and gathering supplies along with throngs of Iraqis who are doing the same thing. Stores are actually running out of certain things like basic water and bread and basic foodstuffs in the smaller stores. Many of the restaurants are already closing, and traffic is beginning to thin out on the streets as these heavy draconian measures of security, like the extended curfews and limiting the use of civilian vehicles and such approaches. People are running around. The mood here is very tense. You can feel this sort of electricity in the air, basically an underlying fear and anxiety, because people really just don't know what to expect. It's almost as if another war is about to begin this weekend is really the mood here.
You have titled your latest dispatch from Baghdad, "Here Comes the Freedom." You say people are terrified. Families are fleeing Baghdad, much as they did prior to the invasion of the country. Talk a little more about the possibility of election refugees.
Yes, that is indeed the feeling, as I was just describing. It's people are very, very afraid. Even those who are very anticipatory of these elections, who are looking forward to vote, who are looking at this as a historical event and hoping for better change, and they fully intend to participate, even these people are very concerned. They're very afraid of the attacks. Even when they talk very proudly, like, "Yes, I will vote," it's with a sort of a tense feeling about them where they know what's at stake. They know that they'll be putting their lives on the line, and that is the theme here in the air these days, is people are very concerned. They know that this weekend is going to be full of chaos and bloodshed one way or another, and they're trying to do their best to make preparations for something. But this something is really not what anyone can predict. No one here really has any idea how it will go this weekend. So that's really the most challenging part. Many people are leaving Baghdad, going to stay with relatives either in the outer edges of the city or completely outside of the city, because some are concerned enough that it will be that bad. So it's you know, rather elections, for example, back in America, it's usually an exciting time. People are going to vote, talking with everyone, oftentimes getting together to watch the results. The opposite is the case here. It's got this air of dread around it. Even with those, as I said, who want to vote, they have very deep feelings of concern about safety and security and water and electricity. So it's any picture of this that's being painted, of this being a joyful time and a momentous time for this country, is certainly one that would not be complete without including the background of shattered infrastructure, escalating violence on a daily basis and people very, very concerned for their welfare throughout this whole process.
Looking at some of the headlines during the past week, Dar, USA Today, the headline is "More Bombs as Iraq Voting Nears." When you go down to the first paragraph, you find that the White House was encouraging interim Iraqi President Ghazi al-Yawar to discuss security and how to encourage the largest voter turnout possible. This according to White House spokesperson Scott McClellan. Talk about this juxtaposition of news information to the American people.
Basically, every line that comes out of the White House regarding the situation, we can contrast it with the reality of the ground that is 180 degrees. For example, Mr. Bush in his recent press conference was talking about encouraging Iraqis to defy the terrorists. But the funny thing about that is if you ask so many Iraqis here who have suffered under this brutal occupation, if you said, okay, defy the terrorists, they would say, okay, well, then I must defy the U.S. government and the U.S. military because they are the terrorists here in this country. And vast numbers of Iraqis feel that way towards the occupation and towards the occupation forces. And then if we talk about how this Bush administration is attempting to paint such a rosy picture of these elections that, yes, this is Iraq stepping into democracy and freedom and the people are embracing it, it's not that way on the ground here at all. It's a very, it's essentially, even for those who are excited about the election, which is certainly at most 50% of the entire population of Iraq, those people are doing so with great concern, knowing that they are risking their lives to vote, that there's a very high likelihood that they will be injured or killed by trying to venture into one of these polling stations on Sunday. So it's a very bleak picture here, and this election, so many people feel it is nothing more than a huge smokescreen to distract people from the catastrophe that this entire occupation is, and especially the fact that it's going to continue on, even by admittance of people in the Pentagon, that U.S. ground troops will be here, over 100,000 will be here for at least another 2 years.
Now, as you go down the column in that story, and that was a week ago, Thursday, January 20th, you see a listing of bombings and horrible incidents which killed dozens of Iraqis. We have had a terrible incident, too, with a U.S. helicopter coming down and dozens of U.S. GIs wounded, killed this week. Do you think that the president has in any way changed his view? Are you picking up on any modification of the view having to do with encouraging people to the polls in Iraq?
Without a doubt, there has been a change in their views, especially since he has been granted 4 more years in office. And that change is that he has stepped up his aggressive foreign policy in this country. We've had the complete demolition of Fallujah. We've had massive military onslaughts throughout the country. We've had huge corresponding increasing numbers of U.S. soldiers dying, along with all of the Iraqi civilians that are being killed. So, yes, there's been a great change in his policy. Now, whether this is geared to actually help people on the ground to vote, again, this is where if we look at the Bush administration, they say, yes, this is for safety, this is for security. But when we look at how this actually plays out on the ground, this has done nothing but cause further destabilization, blood, and chaos in Iraq. If we remember back, all the way back to November 2004, which the U.S. media seems a way of not being able to do, as we recall, the justification for the siege of Fallujah was to bring stability and security for the elections. And look at Iraq now compared to where it was on November 8th. It is exponentially worse, and here we are 2 days before the elections, and everyone is afraid to vote, even those who are going to risk it.
Now, the president's one remark on the mainstream press this day, the 27th of January, has been that he's disappointed. I don't know what his expectations were, but he says he's disappointed about the violence. I don't know what to look for in signs from the Pentagon or the White House that they may be softening their view about the upcoming election. But if you've heard any, share them with us and share the view about that very thing, the flexibility that or inflexibility of the White House under these grave conditions.
Well, as far as them being disappointed, I imagine they've been disappointed since the beginning of invasion when Iraqis didn't greet them with roses and fine meals for the troops and embracing them and kissing them. Rather, we have a country in chaos and that is in a state of disrepair and more people turning against them for the day. Even those, the strongest followers of Sistani and the people who are fully compelled to vote in this election are all saying simultaneously, we want the occupiers out as soon as this election is complete. And what we have as far as the inflexibility of the Bush administration, one thing I have seen consistently here over the last 14 months that I've been reporting out of Iraq is that when they conduct operations and they end up causing more enemies than helping people, which has been the case since day one of this occupation, we have, as a result of that, they take it to the next level. As, for example, look at Fallujah. They had the April siege that was a failure. Now they have this November siege, which is an ongoing catastrophe. It has done nothing but increase the resistance and spread it all around the country and cause more people to support it. And so when we see them as classic Bush policy of just moving forward no matter what the reality is on the ground, no matter what public opinion says, but just moving forward at full speed, every time they hit a brick wall, it seems as though they step on the gas.
I want to go through some of the headlines again today, the 27th of January. This is AP, U.S. soldiers spreading out around Baghdad, packing extra ammunition ahead of Sunday's national elections. This story happens to be headline, U.S. and Iraqi forces begin security operation to protect voters. Four paragraphs down, what you find is that the U.S. military officials say American troops will be ready if the Iraqis become overwhelmed. Dar Jamil, you've been saying that police and Iraqi soldiers are trying to convince Iraqis to stay and vote. And tell me exactly your interpretation of this sentence, U.S. military officials say American troops will be ready if the Iraqis become overwhelmed. First, who do you think they're talking about? Overwhelmed by who? Second, what do you think that the U.S. military will do? Third, in what timely fashion, let's just say news-wise, when will they be able to arrive to help the Iraqi people as they struggle? And tell us more about this as a newsman.
Well, really, essentially, all this is, and rather than taking the questions one at a time, really, this is propaganda, advanced propaganda to justify what will be done on Sunday. Because what they're preparing to do, and I've seen this personally myself, they are now sealing off the trouble spots they've had throughout Baghdad, districts such as Al-Dora, Amariya, Adamiya, and they are literally blocking bridges with concrete barriers, sand barriers, razor wire, and sealing these areas. And everyone in these areas is expecting them to come in and launch full-scale operations, doing massive home raids, basically launching offenses on their own. It's not about helping the Iraqi people. It's about using this as an excuse to launch major operations throughout the country into other areas, sort of mini Fallujahs, if you will, and try to basically do a counteroffensive to what they fully expect the resistance to do. It has nothing to do with protecting voters. It has everything to do with attempting to clamp down on this resistance, which they have completely failed to do. And it's another instance of them using extremely heavy-handed tactics. They will go in, they will make a couple of gains, basically take a step or two forward, which will, in the long run, in effect, put them three or four steps behind, just as what's happened in Fallujah after each siege of that city. So they're getting ready to launch major operations. And really, if we're going to look at what violence does occur this weekend, it would be safe to say, I think, that just as many civilians are going to be killed by Iraqi police and Iraqi soldiers with U.S. support and U.S. soldiers as opposed to those who are killed by resistance fighters. And again, this has been the trend throughout the occupation, far more civilians have died at the hands of U.S. forces here than they have at the hands of the resistance fighters.
We've seen a couple of developments where police have actually walked off the job. Maybe you know about that story, Dar Jamail.
Yes, that's very, very common here. We've had entire police squads and brigades in the Iraqi army walk off the job in protest, either in Fallujah or in other areas around the country where they've been asked to do operations with or for the U.S. forces here. So that's a very common thing, and most likely I would expect to see much of that over the weekend. The same thing happened in Mosul when the military went up there and began operations. Mass numbers of the police force literally just stayed in their homes and wouldn't come out.
We can get a little bit of a sense of what's really going on if we read between the lines of the news. Then there is the story, again, AP, top U.S. commander says Iraqi forces still not ready to lead counterinsurgency. This is the top commander in Iraq. He is General George Casey, saying Iraqi police and soldiers still lack leaders to direct them in a fight against the rebels. Dar, what have you been seeing in the area that you've been as far as the expectation of the Iraqi people from these policing entities? Do they look to them for security? What is the relationship or rapport in Iraq between these people working for the U.S. as police or military and the Iraqi people we expect to vote on Sunday the 30th?
There really is no rapport. People tend to avoid the police and the Iraqi soldiers because they are seen as collaborators. Let me just give you an idea of how much people really distrust and dislike these police and soldiers, the Iraqi police and soldiers. So many, at least half of the police and soldiers I see around Baghdad now, they wear black face masks because they know that if they are found out, their true identity, they will be targeted immediately by the resistance. They really don't have respect. A large reason for this is because this has been undermined by the military by going in and occupying police stations, not giving them the respect and the autonomy that they need to do their job. Everyone in Iraq sees this, so of course they really lack respect for these supposed security forces. So the security forces are put in a very difficult position. They attempt to do their jobs while their respect has been consistently undermined by the military. So Iraqis really don't see them as being able to provide any security, and nothing speaks louder about that than just the situation on the ground here. It's chaos. There is no security. People are afraid to leave their homes much of the time. So this, along with the fact that we do see many Iraqi police and Iraqi army roaming the streets, but it certainly hasn't done anything to stop the crime or the fighting that continues to happen here on a daily basis.
Now, in spite of the fact that the vote by Iraqis living outside of Iraq begins tomorrow, we still are not seeing news and information about who the candidates are. And yet, I'm looking at, again, an Associated Press report, January 27th, Iraq reporting the vote. The headline also says, Arab media give Iraqi election center stage, with many deriding it. I know you had said that not all of the candidates can afford the kind of security that would be required to announce their candidacy, and so they are remaining secret and not campaigning at all. In this piece, they're claiming that the Arab media is filling the airwaves and newspapers with coverage of Iraq's upcoming election, and that they are featuring profiles on those running for a spot in the country's 275-member National Assembly. Talk about the problem of information about the candidates.
Well, that is a huge problem, and that has been the biggest complaint I've heard from Iraqis, those who won't vote, as well as those who do intend to vote, is we don't even know who we're voting for. It's very frustrating. Those who are wanting to vote say, yes, I want to vote. I want an election. I want anything that's going to help this country move forward, to to make some progress and bring some sort of stability. But it's difficult to vote when we don't know who the candidates are. We don't know who we're voting for. And then those whose names are available, such as Alawi and Chalabi, everyone has a distrust of them because these are people who haven't been in the country sometimes for decades, like Alawi. He left the country in 1971, did not come back until the U.S. invasion. Similar with Chalabi. So people don't trust them. They don't really look at them as national Iraqis. And this has been the biggest complaint that I've heard is, how can we vote if we don't know who we're voting for? And it's the same thing that many of the people, even if they're not Sunnis, they're choosing to not vote simply because they're confused and frustrated by all of this, all of these anonymous candidates, and not even knowing where many of the polling stations are going to be located yet.
In the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, a foreign election advisor, not named, is quoted in another AP report today, talking about how long Iraqis will have to wait to learn the results or any results of the election. Have you heard anything about that subject of where Iraqis will learn who has been elected in this poll?
Yes, Iraqis will have to wait at least 1 week. They're saying right now it will take a week for them to tabulate these results, but many people feel that it could potentially take longer, and it seems as though, since they're all handwritten ballots, no computer systems for checking, that it would make sense that it would probably take a bit longer than a week, since so many Iraqis in different countries are voting as well. It's another element that is confusing and frustrating Iraqis. The votes are going to take at least a week to be counted, and they're not even going to be counted in Iraq. They're going to be counted in Iran, Jordan.
There have been some explosions at schools in Baghdad. Talk a little about how that might affect how Iraqis view the insurgency or the militants, however you would define them.
Yes, this actually has been ongoing for many, many weeks now, that any time a school is, because schools are being used very heavily as polling stations all throughout Iraq, and as they begin to outfit these schools, they immediately come under attack. They're being hit with mortars on a daily basis. Already, suicide car bombers are targeting them, even though elections are still days away. And people are very, very frustrated by this because the schools were one of the things that the Western contractors, such as Bechtel, had boasted so heavily about, that they were going to reconstruct and rehabilitate these schools. And we've seen next to no progress in much of Iraq in regarding these schools, that many of them lie in a state of disrepair, even the schools that, which were supposedly reconstructed. So Iraqis, so many people I've been speaking with, are very distraught because they know the situation of the schools, and now they are basically being turned into targets by the resistance because of the government's insistence of using them as polling stations. Again, a result of this rushed election not having better facilities to cope with this situation. So now the schools are going to suffer much more damage, as they already are. Many are being destroyed to a point where they're unusable. And, of course, Sunday, it's most likely to grow much, much worse. And so many people are very frustrated by this, saying things like, many of our children are already staying at home. Now this is only going to increase that, and it's almost as if the education system now is under attack.
Dar Jamil is author of an online dispatch home. You can read it at darjamiliraq.com. One title, January 27th, 2005, Here Comes the Freedom. Another, January 26th, 2005, Vote Where, How, and For Whom. And you can read that story in Interpress News Service. Dar, we are not reading very much about some of the economic dynamics going on behind the scenes, even as America saber rattles and even makes incursions now into Iran. Comment on that process of new escalating language and military operations. And also talk about it in the context of some of the contracting for oil and some of what you know about what is pushing the U.S. forward in this militant position. Does it have anything to do with oil, dollars versus euros? Does it have anything to do with the level of oil available to America? I mean, what is going on politically and economically behind the scenes that you know about?
Well, really, regarding Iran, Iraq is just the first step in this administration's policy and goals of controlling the world oil. It doesn't matter that it's not getting the oil from Iraq, the fact that this is the second largest petroleum reserves on the planet under the soil that I stand on now. That's not important that it's being put to use now. In fact, if we look at the price of gasoline in the States, it's done nothing but go up since this administration has took office. And it's because the people, the huge supporters behind the Bush administration, all have such interest in having higher oil prices per barrel. And this is what we've seen, and this is what we're going to continue to see. Because if the U.S. was serious about tapping into these oil reserves, it would have already done so. And that's just not happening. So it's basically controlling Iraq now, controlling the flow of oil here, and having influence on the price of oil in the world market. And if it takes Iran much more oil there, and even more importantly, very strategically located near the Caspian Sea, then it will, in effect, be in control of a huge amount of world oil and essentially sitting on the spigot, being able to open it or close it at will dictate the prices. And this is a first step in that direction. And now that they have designs on Iran, the propaganda has begun to paint Iran as a terrorist state, that Iran is now a threat to world peace, and this is the state of tyranny that the U.S. must bring this freedom to, which it has placed upon Iraq. It's just another step in that direction, and it's of course, all about the economy. It's not so much about the economy, that is, as it is as about basically greasing the palms of these corporations, which are the engine of the Bush administration. It's about controlling the world oil. It's about empire.
Dar, once again, thank you so much for joining us, and be safe during this time of news blackout and ongoing elections in Baghdad.
Thanks again for having me, Dory. I'll do my best.
Alaskan journalist Dar Jamail has been reporting from Iraq over roughly 8 months. You can hear his regular radio reports on Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, the BBC, and other radio services internationally. His regular dispatches home can be found at darjamailiraq.com, darjamailiraq.com. For the Crisis Vote, I'm Dory Smith. This program was produced in the studios of WHUS Stores, Radio for the People. To learn more about this program, write to me, Dory Smith, at theshockvote@yahoo.com. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or the University of Connecticut.